This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Tuesday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
So I had a little weird computer glitch there. It was like, oh, what's that? Oh, wow. What? Rough day today. Rough day show prep. And I got to tell you, the news cycle today is awful.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm kind of going, the first thing that popped in my mind, you said you had a little glitch, computer glitch mm-hmm. there. I'm like, well, maybe you saw a ginger cat walk by and, you know, a little, I'll draw your attention that direction.
I'm so glad you said that because today is National Ginger Cat Day. And I have had two little redheaded boys, little redheaded Petey's. One of them was, my first one was Dieter. He was adorable. He was a cat that was found by the dumpster. And the other one was the beloved Putty. They are the best cats. They have the best demeanor. They are sweet. They are loving. They are little dippy doos because they're kind of silly. So I am so celebrating and appreciating. And I wish I had one now. I miss my little ginger cats.
Yeah, I am not a cat person. I've never actually owned a cat.
Oh, see, ever. I'm not a dog person.
Yeah, I've had dogs though. I've had relatives with cats. Cats, and I've never really gotten along with them that well. I don't know.
Really? Maybe. Cats are kind of jerks. Mm-hmm. Cats just don't really care. I mean, there's that meme of like, you know, I've fallen and I can't get up, and oh, now I've died, and the cat just sort of settles in and, you know, takes a nap on your back.
Well, what was it? It was said to me many years ago. It says, you know, when you train a dog well, it goes to the bathroom outside. No matter how well you train a cat, it still does it in your house.
Yeah, it's amazing. I haven't had cats in a long time. Mm-hmm. Just litter box technology has come a long way. I mean, I remember you just used to have to scoop it and do all the dumping. And now these huge contraptions that come in and rotate and pull it all out and seal it up in a hermetically sealed bag. So you just basically pop it in your trash.
Well,
wow.
Well, that's why we need our data center. So AI can control our pooper scoopers. Come on.
There you go. There's another reason. Also, interestingly enough, weird enough, because for anyone who's had this, I don't know that you appreciated it. Acne Positivity Day? What?
Well, I'm sure this was a feel-good day created to, you know, make people feel up when they're suffering with acne, right?
Yeah, I know people who have, what is it, cystic acne, the really bad. Yeah. I had zits and stuff. I think we all had zits mm-hmm. in high school. I had, you know, some bad, I've still got a couple scars, but I had family members who, I mean, have real cratery, really bad, where they had it really, really bad. I don't know how do you spin that positively, except when you finally get over it, when you get out of your teens. Mm-hmm. And that's positive.
Well, and I go, you know, it's funny because having younger people in my house that are going through that puberty process mm-hmm. that brings on the acne, it's funny how things have changed in how it is dealt with. Because, you know, for me, it was always, you know, just wash your face real good and, you know, hot water and try and get rid of it. Maybe a little cream if it got irritated thing kind of thing. You know, the girls would put on a little makeup, try and cover it up. You can always kind of tell. Now they actually have these little stickers that they put over them.
I know, those little pimple things. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so you see kids walk around with a little star sticker, a heart sticker or something, and you're kind of going, why are you wearing a sticker on your face? And then you kind of realize, oh, they have a pimple.
It's funny. It reminds me of way back in the day, a century ago, the beauty marks were a thing. And I mean, they got really elaborate and you'd have like a little ship on your forehead or something. I know what you're talking about. See, back in my day, it was like Stridex pads and sea breeze. I mean, like acid on your face. And then I remember the apricot scrubs and you'd like just take off a layer of skin with it. And no wonder our faces were just like screaming at us in bright red. I mean, we were like abusing them. So I think a little sticker is great. They've come along way with treatments and stuff like that. So I don't know that I've really not seen too many kids anymore that have really bad acne.
No, they're I mean, there's definitely medical advances that have helped with that, because I'm not seeing it nearly as much as I did, especially when I was in high school. So
Yeah, think we've come a long way. Also noting a little black dress day. Back in the day, I had a lovely little black dress. Felt so good in that. And of course, the picture is of Audrey Hepburn in it. She was just lovely.
Well, and I never had that either. But
no.
But I have tried my chest at this one because it's also National Chess Day. Because in 1972, Bobby Fischer won the first American to win the World Chess Championship. So
it was a big, big deal.
I'm not very good at it, but I've tried it a few times.
Yeah, I'm not that great at it. I do remember watching a movie, was it Searching for Bobby Fischer, about a little kid chess prodigy? Mm-hmm. It was a good movie. It was a good movie. Yeah, I've never been big on chess. I like backgammon. Mm-hmm. As far as that, and you know, of course, checkers. Sure, why not?
Checkers is simple. I struggle with chess because I have a hard time predicting my opponent's next move and planning like three moves ahead. Yeah, that's my problem.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Other things happening on this day: P.T. Barnum brings European opera star Jenny Lind to New York. Ooh, bringing Claassen up the joint there. And again, interesting that it was P.T. Barnum.
Yep. And in 1807, Aaron Burr was acquitted of treason. The former vice president was plotting to annex parts of Louisiana in the Spanish Terri in Mexico. So, you know, those politicians, they get away with a lot.
Yeah. There's a post that I found, too, that I thought was interesting. It was about vice presidents. Mm-hmm. Oh, here it is, because that just kind of fits in. It was, of the 50 people who have served as U.S. vice presidents, only 15 have gone on to become president.
Hmm.
Seems like a low number. 9 succeeded to the presidency because the president died or resigned. That was John Tyler, Millard Fillmore, Andrew Johnson, Chester A. Arthur, who I always forget was a president, Theodore Roosevelt, Calvin Coolidge, one of my favorite presidents, Harry Truman, Lyndon Johnson, and Gerald Ford. 6 were elected president. They were elected president: John Adams, Jefferson, Martin Van Buren, Richard Nixon, George H.W., and then, of course, Joe Biden.
So that's when you're thinking of who is next in line for the presidency, and we always talk about that. Who's going to run for president? Who's next in line? Who's sitting on the bench? And we're talking, you know, of course, right now it's J.D. Vance, of course.
Yeah.
But to realize only 6 of the vice presidents in this country's histories have gone on to be elected on their own to become president. That's kind of mind-boggling statistically. What is that? You know, less than 1 in 7?
Yeah, not a high number. And I remember, of course, after when it was after Clinton, Gore Lieberman, sore loserman, because we had to go through the hanging chads and all that. And then ultimately W came in through that. So I thought that was interesting. Of course, now the conversation is, you know, J.D. Vance. Okay, yeah. But what about Marco Rubio? And I don't think Marco Rubio would challenge or run against J.D. Vance. I'm fine with either one. I am leaning a little more on Team Rubio, though. Mm-hmm. But. Yeah.
Well, and I would suspect as we get closer to the next presidential election, you might start hearing names like Ron DeSantis and such as well. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting period when we come up towards the end of this 4-year term, because there's a lot of names that hold a little bit of clout that may be seeing running in this primary.
Ted Cruz is making noise about running again as well, which would be fine. And I think that would be fine. Yeah. Of course, DeSantis is term limited out in Florida. Is it Byron Donalds? Yeah. Won the primary there. I like him. Yes. He'll be great. So speaking of all that, today marks 9 weeks to the election.
Ooh.
I know. And so there's so much at stake in this. We've got other, you know, just looking at the education, and a lot of people are saying, is 40 years enough for this experiment of one party rule? What have you got to lose? What have you got to lose?
Well, that sadly, I'm not a big fan of the message of what have you got to lose. But at the same time, I'm kind of going, we need a paradigm shift for so many people to realize that, you know, all of the woes of Oregon are not created at the federal level. They haven't all occurred in the last...
Almost none of them.
Well, they haven't occurred in the last 2 years either. They are a 40-year downhill slide that we have been on. And to think that they can blame 2 years of Donald Trump being president, maybe if they really want to stretch it, you include the other 4 that happened a few years back. And I'm kind of going, Oregon's problems didn't happen in that short a period of time. Yeah. It's been the one-party rule that has dominated and taken us down this road where we are burning at record paces, our kids are not being educated, our crimes are on the rise, our population is dwindling. This didn't happen because of Donald Trump. Because if you want to sit there and go, Donald Trump's the problem, it's like, well, then why didn't the population of Oregon explode with all of the people that don't want to be ruled by Donald Trump? Because remember, our governor is fighting. She's not going to let the federal government do anything.
Yeah. You'd think everybody would be rushing into Oregon because that's the Mecca where everybody that their governor fights Donald Trump.
Well, at least
we want to be over there.
Yeah, at least
must
the
be great over there.
Washington, Oregon, California. Why aren't they in a massive population boom? I mean, imagine all those poor people in Idaho or Wyoming that have TDS. This is like safe haven. These are hugs and kisses if you come in here.
I know. Instead, we see just the opposite. Interesting.
Hmm.
So speaking of stuff that's at stake, let's take a break because there's some, education. Again, that's been just, need a sound effect, a swirl sound effect as we go
just
down.
Just a flushing toilet.
I know, just a flushing sound. So we're going to take that break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Miller's Barbecue and Catering.
All right, so we talk a lot about education in Oregon, of course, and specifically Salem-Keizer, and the numbers and the stats and the money, and I mean, none of it's looking good. I mean, Oregon ranks very, very low. Salem-Keizer doesn't rank very high. OPB article today headline, the length of Oregon's school year isn't everything. Why attendance and instruction matter too. The discussion is shifting from simply how many hours students spend in classes to chronic absenteeism and then the quality of instruction. I mean, if you're not showing up, first of all, and I don't know, are there like truancy officers anymore? If your little Johnny doesn't show up, does somebody go knock on mom's door and dad's door and say, where's Johnny?
Well, they're not officers anymore, but...
Well, that would be too scary. We can't have it. Yeah.
That would PTSD people, I guess. I don't know. They do have within the Salem-Keizer School District, security guards kind of also serve as those truancy officers, so they will reach out.
So we don't have SROs, but we've got security guards?
Yes, they have untrained, unarmed security guards.
Wow. Whose bright idea was that? Never mind, I know.
Why are you asking questions you know the answer to?
I'm like a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you have to, you want kids to go to school.
Yep.
But then what are they learning? I mean, we talk about these being, it used to be you'd have to worry when your kid went off to university that would become a sort of, they'd marinate in woke ideology and stuff. Well, that's now crept down into the elementary schools as well, because you look at the teachers' colleges and where teachers are coming from, they're marinating and all that. So of course that's going to bring that to your kids. And of course, now we've got 8 schools being threatened. I think Portland Public Schools, it's 15 that are going to be potentially closing because either people are pulling them out, they're homeschooling, they're moving, they're getting out of the state entirely. I think the superintendent in Salem was talking about low birth rates, which, yes, I'm sure that has something to do with it. Is it the main driver? I don't think so.
Well, I would sit there and I'd say, okay, low birth rates can be a thing, but why are Oregon birth rates lower than other states? And, there's the thing. It's kind of like people aren't moving here to have children.
No, it's an expensive state to have a family. I mean, you look at housing, the rising housing costs. We talk with Amy about that every other week about, I mean, things are getting very, first time home buyers, young parents with little kids can't necessarily afford to get into housing. Mm-hmm. Everything else costs so much. Gas. Yep.
Yeah, no, I, so much of it is, kids as they are reaching an age to start having a family of their own are looking at greener pastures, not, foliage wise, but financially wise. I mean, that's the other thing is Oregon businesses are leaving. Job opportunities are fewer and far between. Once people are entering the job market at $20 an hour minimum wage, they're quickly realizing that $20 doesn't go as far as the sound of it does.
Right.
And it's those things. Oregon is so expensive. Oregon is so business unfriendly. Oregon is so education unfriendly that, the people that are having kids are moving to other states if the opportunity arises for them.
I've seen so many sort of anecdotal posts of saying, I've got 5 adult children or, 2 of them are coming up and none of them are planning to stay in Oregon. And, and I'm sorry, it sounds like doom and gloom, but I mean, it is the state of affairs in it. I'm seeing a lot of representatives and legislators that are posting out on TikTok. begging people to vote differently. We don't have to live like this. It doesn't have to be like this. It's all choices. It's all policy choices. And the disconnect and the people that are buying the bilge coming out of the Kotek campaign that it's all Trump's fault. Like you said, it's just connect the dots, for God's sake.
Well, I just sit here and I go, okay, let's see. Salem Kaiser School District starts a week from now. Some of the Portland area school districts are starting this week. And of course, the big news coming out of Seattle is the Seattle Education Association is planning to strike as they start school in the next week because they want more money when they're already some of the highest paid teachers in the nation. But of course, like we said, the cost of everything in this Northwest is so expensive. Everyone wants more money. Everyone's looking out for themselves. And I'm kind of just going, where do we go from here as the attendance at school are dropping? I mean, I think the new policy now is if your student misses 10 straight days, they get unenrolled. And then you have to re-enroll them into class.
Does it have to be consecutive?
Yeah, consecutive days. You could literally go 9 days, show up at school, and then go another 9 days. And like we talked about earlier, you know, the school security guards that double as attendance truancy officers, they'll reach out about day 6, 7, 8 to check in and see what's going on because, of course, they want the kids back in school because they get money for the kids in school. But like last year, my daughter broke her arm. And when we called the school to say she's going to miss a couple of days, the response was, well, if she misses more than 10, you'll have to re-enroll her. I'm going, she has a broken arm. Not a broken back.
Yeah.
I'm going, why are you literally preparing for my kid to miss like weeks of school for a broken arm?
Because that's the norm and they just treat everybody like that's what everybody's going to do. That's just,
well, unfortunately,
is there no nuance? Did they even know your daughter? Who's your daughter? Did they know?
Yeah, they know. My kids are pretty well known. They, there's enough of them that they've kind of created a reputation, I guess.
Well, the other thing with schools too, and which we talk about a lot too, is the behavior in modern classrooms is becoming more dangerous. And so also what happens is you're losing a lot of really talented teachers and they quitting for the pay because they are paid very well. I worked for the school district, not as a teacher. I worked in facilities and maintenance for a long time. The pay was very good. The benefits were great. The people I worked with were amazing. I loved it. But then I drove a school bus for a long time and I've talked about this. I left doing that in 2006 and already in 2006, they were starting to take away disciplinary tools. And think about it. You're on a big bus with your back to 80 unruly kids, even having a camera on that bus, you would still have parents argue with you that little Jimmy didn't punch little Susie when it was like right there on video. So now you've got classrooms where they clear all the good kids to let the bad kid have a tantrum. And then you've got teachers being physically assaulted. What are the numbers here? And this is a Salem Business Journal article, so hat tip to them. A 2024 study found that 80% of surveyed teachers had experienced verbal threats and more than half had experienced physical violence. In Salem Kaiser Public Schools alone, an investigation uncovered more than 1,000 reports of staff injuries between 2019 and 2023. A 2025 national survey showed that 55% of teachers report student behavior has worsened over just the last 2 years.
What happened to the days of the kid having a emotional outburst, upset with the teacher, you know, coming around the corner of the hallway, seeing the teacher down the way, yelling an expletive at their teacher and then turning and running away? What happened to those days? Because those are the things I remember in terms of teacher confrontations when I was in school. A kid would have a rough day. They would see the teacher in the hallway and from 50 feet would yell out, you know, F you, teacher, and then turn and run the other direction. That was the extent of the bad behavior, you know, excess in the classroom setting.
Yeah, because there have always been bad apples and rotten little kids that make things miserable for everything. There's always been bullying. There's always been this kind of, we had detention. I mean, you just remember the Breakfast Club back in the day. Mm-hmm. That was Saturday school detention. You had consequences. They used to hold kids back. Mm-hmm. And there was shame and stigma to doing that. You did not want to be that kid who got held back. And now the coddling of the American mind, the Jonathan Haidt book. Everybody is coddled. We can't upset them. We can't embarrass them. What happened to embarrassment and shame being motivators to do well, or at least the best you can?
Well, and that's the thing. It's you've said it numerous times. You know, one of the big downturns was teachers, you know, no longer going by Miss, Mr., Mrs.
Yep.
And becoming Tom or
Doug
or Martha
Samantha.
Or yes.
Yeah.
You know, one, you're losing the respect factor, the adult to child respect that really is due. You are allowing, like you said, we're catering to the bad behavior rather than building up the good. And I saw this 10, 12 years ago with my daughter, in terms of, you know, you're excelling, you're doing very well in school, you are a role model to your classmates. And instead of being encouraged and built up that way, it's almost a try and knock them down so that they're all on par, because we don't want anyone to stand out, because you have to all be on par. The only way you get to stand out is with your bad behavior. And we've encouraged it.
That's socialism in a nutshell. We'll bring everybody down to the lowest common denominator. You don't lift anybody up. And we're seeing the consequences of that, where the respect for education, the respect for life in general. I mean, the society has just spiraled so far down. And education isn't valued. It's if you've got kids not even bothering to show up, and when you've taken the Salem Kaiser diploma and made it what? Yeah. All right. If you can sort of read and sort of do a little math. Okay, here you go. You pass. Off you go. Have a good life. It becomes meaningless, and kids know that. They're not dumb.
Yeah, well, and of course, I mean, the whole state of Oregon has turned a high school diploma into that. And at what point do colleges around this nation look at our best and brightest out of Oregon and go, sorry, you went to Oregon schools, you're not worth coming here?
Yeah, because what are the standards used in Oregon to determine the best and the brightest?
Yeah, they're the bottom of the barrel. So it's we have to start looking long term. We need to build up our kids, build up our educational structure, and be able to send our kids to represent the state of Oregon around the nation and doing great things. And instead, we're going the other direction.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
All righty, welcome back, everybody. Like I said, today was a really rough day on show prep. A lot of just really awful things happening. Mm-hmm. Some things that I just decided we're not going to visit those things, but there's a story here. And this kind of is a broader conversation about just cities. Salem is a city. Mm-hmm. I know for a lot of years, it didn't really feel like it, but it is a city. It's the second or sometimes the third largest city. The battle between Salem and Eugene goes on. And, you know, while there's crime and there always has been, it just seems like cities, especially in blue states, but also crazy blue cities and red states. I just saw something coming out of Boise. There was another murder in Boise. That's a red state, but it's these blue cities that tend to rule the roost. This story coming out of New York, and I love New York. I spent so much time in New York City. I don't think I'd go anymore. I don't think it would be safe. Victim stabbed to death in Times Square. She's been identified as a VP at the Bank of America. She just celebrated her second wedding anniversary. There's this crazy lunatic woman who has basically chef's knives running around Times Square. She stabbed a man. She stabbed this woman. She ended up, they tried to tase her. She charged at the police. She was shot and she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
This is insane. And again, this is not gun violence. These are knives. People determined to kill will find something to do it with.
Well, here's the kicker. She stabbed two people, killing one of them and injuring another. And she did this by pulling out these knives. It took 20 seconds to stab two people.
20 seconds and fatally for one of them.
Mm-hmm. And yes, this is so underlying. I guess this woman has a long, long history of mental health problems.
Probably
very well known to the police and people of the area. So I'm kind of going, this sounds like it could happen absolutely any city where we are allowing people with documented mental health issues, drug issues, and just kind of erratic behavior to just go around unchecked, because what, it would be mean to put them into finding somewhere for them to get help.
Yeah, well, we've closed down all the mental institutions, and I stipulate that was Reagan in a lot of cases, and there's been no place, and so these people were just sort of, off you go, hope here's some pills, here's some SSRIs or whatever. And we hope that, we hope you're okay. The scary thing is this was random. Like you said, 20 seconds. I mean, we also see stories of people being pushed off the subway platforms. If you've ever been on a subway platform, you don't want to end up on that third rail. And the randomness of it. And again, still far too many people buried in their phones, not looking around, not keeping their eyes open. I don't know that certainly wouldn't have saved this woman. The streets of New York, when you're walking down them, they're jam packed. Somebody mm-hmm. could literally boom, boom, in and out. You wouldn't even know what hit you.
Well, it's like
it's terrifying to think about that. You're on your way to work and now you're not. You're dead.
Well, it's like shankings you see in like prison movies where they're hustling the guys through and they just kind of as they walk by, it's a quick stabbing. And I just go, you know, the fact that we don't have a quality process to aid people in the mental health field is so frustrating to me. A couple of years ago, I lost a cousin diagnosed severely bipolar. Mm-hmm. When she was on her meds, everything is fine. The problem is left to her own devices at 40 years old. She'd start feeling normal and decide I don't need the meds anymore.
Right.
And then it's turned to the street drugs, and then it's turned to this and run off. And she was actually discovered outside of San Diego in deceased at a homeless camp.
Yeah.
And I just sit here and go, we as a society, we're spending all this money on this housing first model the homeless industrial complex and failing so miserably to help people that literally need the help, the drug addicts, the mentally, challenged people. We're not doing enough to get them the help they need. Instead, we're just enabling bad behavior, which is what leads to things like this. And this can happen right here in downtown Salem. There's large homeless camps, Wallace Marine Park.
Well, remember there was that incident at the UGM.
Mm-hmm. It's not far-fetched that random violence. I think somebody said something. I don't know if it's confirmed yet. This woman thought, or it might not have been, it might've been another incident similar to this in another city where believe they were yelling about the person they were going after, stalking them and following them around. And it's like, this is a mental health drug crisis that instead of dealing with, we are turning our backs on it and saying, do what you're going to do.
Right. Exactly. And it's not kind and compassionate to the woman who is now dead because she was just an innocent victim about her way. It's not kind and compassionate to the woman who murdered her. Mm-hmm. It's not kind and compassionate to anybody. And again, this is what you get when you reimagine the police, when you defund the police, when you demonize the police, when you do not let elected officials handle things. And yes, you want to be humane about it, but this woman should never, after the first, whatever incident first, get her removed from society. They can't be in society. And yet we allow this. And now you've got this mentally twisting of everything where now the woman who stabbed is the victim.
Well,
I'm seeing that narrative play out.
Well, and here's the other thing is I'm sure there's people that are going to go demonize the police officers for shooting the stabber simply because she didn't have a gun. She had knives. And there's ways to disarm someone with a knife.
Well, they tried to taser. That didn't work.
Well, but here's so for me, I'm sitting here going, my other train of thought is, we're talking about let's defund the police, less police, but we'll replace them with mental health experts. Imagine this scenario, because I've seen the video, the woman surrounded by police with her knives out and then charging at them. What would a mental health person without a gun, without any kind of protection done in that scenario?
They would have been stabbed.
They would have been the next victim.
Yeah. And again, for whatever you feel about Rudy Giuliani when he was mayor, I had visited the city back then. It was a completely different vibe. Mm-hmm. It felt a lot safer. He had strict policies of getting people off the street. And a lot of the things that now have been deemed mean and make people uncomfortable actually keep the vast majority. You look at the criminal element in this country as a very small percentage mm-hmm. of the population overall. You focus everything on that population. Remove them from society if they are incapable of being out there. They're going to stab or they're going to murder people or they're going to rape people. You get them out. But you have to be able to do it. It's not mean. You are actually being compassionate to everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Well, and especially with the drug problems and the mental health problems we have in society, you're being compassionate to those people. Yeah. Taking them out of the scenario that they are continuing. I mean, we talk to Matt regularly.
Yeah.
These people, they're in a doom cycle that they can't get out of on their own. And instead of helping them get out of it, whether it is 72 hours in a lockup, whether it is getting arrested and actually facing consequences, whether it is being committed, whatever the scenario is, that actually helps them. And right. instead, we are sitting here saying, we're not going to help you, but we'll enable you.
Exactly right. The harm reduction stuff that's out there. And I don't know how you have to do some mental gymnastics to really convince yourself that you're doing good when you're doing that. And again, the grift, because there's so much money tied up in all of this that it isn't really necessarily. And the goal isn't really maybe to reduce it, because the more money that gets thrown at it, gosh, it just gets worse.
Well, and you know,
are we not supposed to notice that?
Well, and that's the irony. I sit here and go, harm reduction. We can debate if clean needles are worth handing out to drug addicts. We could debate that because of the societal health ramifications of dirty needles. But when you're handing out foil and mm-hmm. plastic bags pipes. And lighters and pipes, yeah, that's not harm reduction. That is, we get free drug paraphernalia and we're going to encourage these people to get high out of their mind. That's all that is.
Yeah. And that's not compassionate to anybody. And of course you mentioned Matt, the Hope dealer, on Sunday mornings, because they get real. He's got guests that have lived through this and people that have been in this lifestyle, and they pull no punches.
Mm-hmm.
And the big thing that we've talked about, and we've gone round and round, housing first. No, wrong. But I fear that the incoming mayor of Salem is all about that. So,
well, and that's,
again, it's policy. It's policy choices.
To me, I sit here and I go, you know, when you're talking housing first, how are you even have housing? Because there's such a large homeless population here in Oregon, particularly mm-hmm. here in Salem. We have the largest encampment. Why haven't we gone to those people, put all of them in a house? Oh, wait, because there's houses available for more people to get into. There's housing options, because guess what? People aren't willing to get into these houses.
Right.
They like the lifestyle they lead. They don't want the responsibility of having to get sober, get, you know, clean, and actually contribute to society and take care of a building, when it's so much easier to just drift off into, you know, the fantasy world of fentanyl and move on.
And when you've got policy and lawmakers that are absolutely enabling that, because it's a virtue signal, nobody wins in that. Nobody mm-hmm. wins at all. And then you get instances like this. And again, talking about it in cities, and does this happen in rural areas? No, not really. Not as much. In smaller cities, you're not going to find tolerance for this. You're not going to find it in small cities in red states, certainly, but you're not going to find it in small cities in blue either. It's a big city problem, and they're usually run by progressive leftist Marxist Democrats. And again, it's policy decisions. And that, like I said, it does happen in Salt Lake City,
mm-hmm.
in Utah, Boise, in Idaho. Those are red states. It's these blue populations. And I wish people would start putting two and two together and connecting those dots, that it is policy decisions that are making life decidedly less comfortable and a little bit more miserable, and in some cases, deadly.
Well, and since we have a governor election in 9 weeks from today, we should also say it's not federal policy decisions that are making this happen.
No.
These are state to local government policy decisions that are leading to these outcomes.
Absolutely right. On that note, let's take our last break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Cozy's New York Deli.
Okay, this is actually good news, because I do a lot of driving. You do a lot of driving. I do not like I get very sketchy around big rigs and everything like this. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy announces a major crackdown on CDLs. 270 truck driving schools have been shut down. 110 schools had 5,000 English language proficiency violations alone. 160 closed for facilities issues and unlicensed instructors. And then thousands of driver's licenses were given to people who can't speak English, which means they cannot read road signs. They cannot read maps. They cannot. And they're out there on the roads. And former CDL, I had a CDL, of course, when I drove a school bus. The training that you have to go into, you kind of need to speak English. So I am delighted that this crackdown has happened.
Yeah. And I just sit here and I go, the most simplest things on the road, you know, when you're learning to drive, it's reading the signs.
Yep.
And following the signs and knowing that if it's a black and white sign, it's the law. If it's a yellow sign, it's a suggestion, and so on and so forth. And if it's a red sign with the word stop on it, it means you stop. You know, simple things. But to think that we have people on these roadways driving large semi trucks who don't even have the language understanding to read those signs.
I drive on a lot of two-lane highways, which I hate.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that the yellow line means that, you know, there's two lanes going in different directions, or is that your what? I mean, all those things that we take for granted because we just
learned it.
Yeah, we learned it.
Mm-hmm.
There's another post out here too. The Operation Highway Shield hits Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and Ohio. Because a lot of times they say that the driver's license are being issued in California, New York, but these people are driving in the Midwest. So you may think, well, I'm fine in Iowa. What am I going to get a California? Oh, yeah, 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 you are.
Yeah.
And so there have been 86 arrests. This is for Operation Highway Shield. 766 out of service orders, 51 illegal immigrants detained, and nearly $1 million in stolen cargo recovered. We got a problem.
Oh, a huge problem. And I just sit here and I go, and that's the lawful side of it. That's not even them driving down the freeway,
right,
swerving, using a couple of lanes. I am just sitting here going, semi trucks and being cautious around semis has been instilled in me since I was, before I was even driving.
Yeah.
My parents told me, you know, they were going over a bridge somewhere, and you know, it was two lanes in each direction going over this bridge, and up in front of them, they all of a sudden see the semi truck intentionally running into the guardrail.
Oh my gosh.
Why? Well, they get up over the crest of the hill and realize traffic was stopped and he was coming in way too fast and was trying to slow the truck down by running into the guardrail. Another one, they were in a wine country in California and, you know, it was a two-lane highway, just like you're talking about.
Yeah.
There was a truck stop to take a left, a small pickup truck. A semi coming up behind it didn't brake, actually jackknifed right in front of them. They were able to stop in time, but the car in front of them was obliterated by the jackknife semi truck. So, and they didn't tell me about it. I actually noticed the damage on the headlight of their car where a piece flew up and cracked the headlight.
That is terrifying. And that's terrifying. Thank God they're okay. I mean, we've seen the video of, remember that idiot doing a U-turn and the car, the minivan, not able to stop, going highway speeds, probably 70, 75 miles an hour, just gone in the blink of an eye again. And again, this is policy. This is the state of California saying we're going to go ahead and issue these driver's licenses. This is New York. And the real world ramifications are what happened to that poor pickup truck driver that was in front of your parents.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's these are people probably, and we'll give them the benefit of the doubt, they're licensed and insured drivers, and bad things happen. And now when you're taking uneducated, uninsured, unlanguage speaking people, maybe, you know, can't read the English language, and you're putting them on the road with thousands of pounds behind them and expecting that you're going to have safe roads, that doesn't make a lick of sense.
No, and it's getting worse. Mm-hmm. And it isn't a one-off, and this is happening, but, you know, but diversity or whatever,
but you can't keep them from working if they want to.
It's like the argument of when, you know, with driver's licenses for illegal aliens that, of course, Oregonians overwhelmingly rejected. And then, of course, the legislature went, whatever, sit down, sweetheart. Isn't it better to have them? No, it isn't.
No, it isn't.
Not at
because
all. Not by any measure.
Because I will guarantee you that there is a percentage of them that are getting that license so they can legally drive, but failing to get maybe the insurance. There's a reason Oregon insurance rates are as high as they are.
Yeah,
and it's because of the extraordinarily high amount of uninsured drivers in the state. So what happens? An uninsured driver gets in an accident. The insurance company has to pay out, and they don't go after these uninsured drivers. They just go after raising your premiums so you can pay a little more to cover for them.
Right. And, you know, some of the people really kind of saying, really ringing the bells about this are longtime long haul truckers who are out there seeing this going, and they see this every day. And they get a bum rap because they're just sort of lumped in with all the illegal activity out there and all the bad driving that's going on. Because it used to be a pretty good gig. Husbands and wives would kind of retire and you'd get a big rig and you do long haul, see the country, get paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound very attractive anymore.
No, and I just sit there and go, you know, if a person who's able to get an Oregon driver's license but shouldn't be getting a CDL, you know, can't get a CDL, guess what? There's DoorDash. There's other ways to drive around if that's the way you need to live your life.
I was in West Salem and I was buying my baskets at Hamlin's and I was coming back and I'm just driving. I'm coming back over the bridge. I was heading back into South Salem, actually. And some guy in front of me, for no reason at all, slams on his brakes. Mm-hmm. So these are just people out driving. You just talk about bad driving, how bad it is. And there was a car in front of me and then the guy who did that. And literally, and I'm in a big pickup. I had to stand on my brakes and this guy just kind of, oh, my bad. But it's terrifying because you just out of nowhere, no warning. If I had been looking down to change the station or something, I probably would have, there would have been a 3-car pileup. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't know the driver's status or anything like that, but just bad driving in general, because there's not a lot of enforcement out there. So people just are like, well, rules, whatever.
Well, I always learned that if you're on the freeway and you miss your exit, you go to the next one and you turn around.
Yes.
If you're in the left lane and you need to make a right turn, you go around the block. But yet I don't see that anymore.
Nope.
I literally watched somebody the other day, on Lancaster in the right lane, stop their car and then turn on their turn signal and wait until they had an opening to get all the way to the left lane.
See, it's the same mentality of I am going to go fly on an airplane in my pajamas. It's just all about me. You're just bit players in my little drama here. If I miss my exit, I'm going to cross 6 lanes over and I'm going to just cut in front of you because it's all about me, not you. I don't care about you. And it's like it's rampant in society at large, mm-hmm. that mindset.
Well, I have two kids that are driving, and the few things I taught them is one, don't ever ride in the kill zone of a semi truck.
Yep.
So
good advice.
If you can't directly pass it, you sit behind it and you wait. And then of course, two, just assume everyone on the roadways is an idiot.
Yes.
You do that and you plan ahead and you realize, that's the one thing that I've been very good about in my life is predicting somebody, driving a little recklessly on the freeway.
Yeah.
I had one time somebody got on a freeway, in the right lane, crossed 4 lanes of traffic and ended up where I was on the shoulder. Because I saw them coming, laying on my horn, and actually got around them before an overpass came up. Another time, I'm on there. I watched somebody get on. I said, this guy's coming right at us. He came over real quick, about 3 lanes. I laid on my horn. The nice part was his wife was in the passenger seat. She got very mad at him for his reckless driving. So
that's the thing. And you're right about kind of having that sixth sense is if you are aware, and mm-hmm. far too many people are completely blissfully unaware in what they're doing. And when you're driving an 80,000 pound rig and you're just that is a absolute danger. Before we go, I know we got around about a minute or so. I just mm-hmm. had to talk about this story. Apparently in Portland, this is a thing. There's a competitive parallel parking. Speaking of driving,
mm-hmm.
I can parallel park. The mustache may beg to differ with me, but I can parallel park.
Well,
and I don't have to have cameras to do it.
Well, see, that's the thing. Do they do it in older cars without the cameras, or do they do it with the cameras? Because technology has created so many easy ways to parallel park. It is a lost art form. Maybe they need to put everybody in like a 65 Chevelle, like a land yeah. yacht, and really see what kind of skills they've got.
You try doing that in an old Impala that's like the size of, the Queen Mary, and do that on a little street in a little town in New Jersey. Yeah, it's going to be one of those lost skills, though, because you're right. I have a backup camera in my car now, which makes it easier, mm-hmm. but I don't have one of those, like, I don't know, is it like a drone?
I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's a live satellite feed and they implant the car in there, because my wife's car actually has an aerial view of the car as you're backing up. I'm going, what the heck kind of world are we living in?
Oh my gosh, another skill lost. All right, everybody, that's it for us today. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.